in beyond and there was no forgetting or ignoring it. I felt my father's wrath in every room of the house, and I never visited his or my mother's grave, knowing the affront it would be. As if they died again, I felt bereft. I was sure they wanted no part of me now, and that I could never turn to them again. Compton people were not so harsh. As much as they disapproved, they also pitied me. No one tried to deprive me of my job. Though there were some who would no longer speak to me, there were more whose pity moved them to be kinder than before. My humiliation was enough for them, and lesson enough for their children. When they saw that my cross was sufficiently heavy, they approved. Even now, times when my heart is light and I'm tempted to laugh in public, I check myself. I know I'll always be on good behavior in Compton, and the more abject I appear, the better off I'll be. It's 10 o'clock, the last day of May, a Saturday, and all of the windows in the house are open for the first time this season. There's a cold breeze coming off the harbor, running through the rooms in currents that break against the walls and boil the curtains halfway to the ceiling. Every year it is the same, the day of opening the windows. The sea wind scours every corner of the house until its heavy atmosphere is broken. All of the memories which hang in odors are borne away until the rooms are only rooms, and this woman, dreaming at a littered kitchen table, is as relieved as if she'd just received communion, left all of her habits at the altar rail, and returned to her pew with no identity but her joy. It is so quiet. The baby is asleep upstairs under a pink quilt. When he wakes, he will have roses in his cheeks. He's so blonde, his hair is nearly white. He bears no likeness to my family, and yet the night he was born, I knew he was mine as surely as these arms or thoughts belong to me. After the pain of labor, as if I had been delivered of all shame, I asked to see the child. When I saw two waving arms, a tiny head, my heart rose up, amazed. And when they put him in my arms, it was love I held, all warmly wrapped, alive. So many tired-looking mothers you see in Compton. They hardly seem to care how they appear. Wearing shabby clothes, herding their little broods across the street, worrying and snapping orders at them. But a Compton woman never shows her deepest feelings to the world. When Paul was first at home, I used to kiss his little face at least 100 times a day. Who but an infant or God could stand so much affection? And all of those kisses were just the beginning of love, the first expression of my newly seated heart, which bloomed, expanded, and flowered with every kiss. At 5 o'clock, I'd pick the baby up from Mrs. Warren, who cared for him the hours I worked. We'd ride home on a crowded bus of Compton women in their 50s, carefully dressed, who rested their heavy bodies behind a row of shopping bags. When they saw the child, their eyes grew soft and bright. What a love, they'd say, all smiles, and they'd ask his name or age and touch the corner of his blanket so gingerly, with reverence, as if they'd forgotten all of the strain, the distraction, the heavy weight of care, which had exalted them and only remembered how close they once had come to perfect love. I could see them in their kitchens years ago, bathing their babies in the little plastic tubs that Compton mothers use. I could imagine them, once so shy, and bending to the will of the town, their fathers, their husbands, becoming fierce and stubborn, demanding so much satisfaction, comfort, and such happiness for their little ones as they never had dreamed for themselves. By now, I ought to have the kitchen clean, the wash brought in and folded, and the vegetables picked and washed. It is so rare I sit and dream that when I do, the memories come fast and heavy as an avalanche. I've known some cynics who remember only pain and ugliness, as if the way a man remembers corresponds with what he hopes. When Paul was born, It changed my past as well as the future. Now when I look back, I see beauty. The older the memory, the more beautiful it has become. Even moments of great pain or disappointment have been transformed, given an importance and a dignity they never had at the time. As if whatever happens and whatever I have failed may one day be redeemed in the far future. I pray it will be so.
Again, but that's not unusual. It's just that the moon is full and you happen to call. And here I sit and on the telephone, hearing a voice I'd known a couple of light years ago, heading straight for a fall. As I remember, your eyes were bluer than robin's eggs. My poetry was lousy, you said. Where are you calling from? A booth in the Midwest. 10 years ago, you some couplets, you brought me something. We don't know what memories can bring. They bring diamonds and love. Seen already a legend. You stared into my arms. Still lost at sea, the Madonna was yours for free. Yes, the girl on the half shell to keep you unharmed. Keep you unharmed. You bought me something.
to the scene, already a legend. The unwashed phenomenon, the original vagabond. Now I see you standing alone with brown leaves falling around and snow in your hair. Now you're smiling and sweating from the hotel over Washington Square. A breath comes out of white clouds, mingles and hangs in the air. Speaking strictly for me, you're offering me diamonds and rust. Well, I've already paid.
Well, have you already paid? That was the Smith Sisters doing Diamonds and Rust, and before that, an attempt to play the Joan Baez version of the same song from the album of the same name. That was a borrowed record, which I hadn't previewed, and it seemed to be in fairly awful condition. But live and learn. I'll have to go hit the thrift shops with a specific album in mind for a change. If any of you have been following my checkered career on the radio, you will know that I am a thrift shop fanatic and a vinyl junkie, as in LP album type petroleum byproduct vinyl. I don't like CDs a lot. I'm starting to come around simply because of sound quality. Cassettes are too hard to queue up. CDs are easy. The fact that many times I will get an album, I'm sure you've done this too, listened to the album all the way through and said to yourself, now if I were producing that album, I would have put the third song on the first side as the first song on the second side, and taken the first song on the second side, made the last song on the first side, and done this, this, and this. And you can do that with a CD. You can just program the thing to play in whatever order you want to, and that's kind of seductive to me. But since I have so little time now, relatively, on the air. I have, the show is 2 hours from 5 to 7 on Sunday mornings, and I'm on between 2 and 3 times a month. I tend to view the show as being very concentrated, that I don't have a lot of time to muck about. When I used to do a show called Cosmic Debris, which is now part of this Sunday morning 5 a.m. lineup, the show used to be on 3:30 to 6, which is 2.5 hours on a weeknight, where I could just come in, yell theater in a crowded fire for 2.5 hours, and nobody would really notice. But I realize that this slot is more listened to by people who have different needs, so I try to program it as tightly as I possibly can. But of course, during the marathon, the fundraising drive, which we are in right now, in the midst of, one has to be a bit more flexible with one's programming. and one has to pause in the middle of delivering as much women's music, literature, art, and current events with my own skewed brand of feminist analysis, to ask people to subscribe, to join this station. And the let me run by the specifics again, which I have on my little piece of paper. This is our spring membership drive, and I don't exactly know when it's going to end. The goal for it is $300,000, and before you turn white and fall out of your bed, that's not a lot of money these days. I know everyone is pleading abject and absolute poverty. Cities, states, and countries are just opening their little purses. The moths are flying out, and they're saying, sorry, we can't. You know, we're going to have to close the zoo, or we can't pay you policemen or firemen or city workers because we don't got the bucks. But somehow and some way, a station with the mission of WBAI always does seem to muddle through. And that is a good thing. It is a good thing that we are here. Any time of the day or night, you can tune into the station and find something that will be of use, of information, that will get your blood flowing in one aspect or another, get you angry, get you happy, make you feel good, make you feel alive somehow. That is done here 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, by many, many different people who come and bring their own brand of fanaticism to the air. And I don't say that in a bad way, because I consider myself a fanatic on a fanatic women's advocate at this point. And my philosophy is that to do good radio here, specifically at this station, nowhere else, you have to be very dedicated, bordering on the verge of fanaticism to your particular subject, to your particular issue. And you can drag people along. You can pull them right out of their chair and get them interested if you can translate your enthusiasm and your fanaticism to them. I've listened to this station for 11 years. I started listening back in 1980. And I got interested, not for any length of time and not in any, to any severe degree, but I got very interested in listening to Latin big band music of the 40s, because there was a man here named Al Angeloro who was fanatic about it. It was his passion. It was his hobby, his love, his joy. I've known Al for a long time, including having him follow me on the air for a while when I was doing Cosmic Debris, and he was doing the morning show. I ran into him once in Jackson Heights, Queens, where I used to live, and I asked him, you know, hi, Al, what are you doing out here? He says, every couple of months, there's this little Latino record store, mainly Colombian, Central and South American records, direct imports from Central and South America. And he says, this guy has primo stuff. And I come out here every couple of months and clean him out. And this was his secret stash of where he got his records. And he's still doing it. He still loves that genre of music. And he brings, when he's on the air talking about it, he brings that love. When Lenny Lopate, who's now on WNYC doing a very popular talk show, was here on our air doing the Sunday Night Gospel Hour, he brought all of his passion and fervor and fanaticism for that particular kind of gospel music from that particular era to the air, and got people, or at least me, very interested in it. I pick up on music more than other things because of the fact that I've been a musician most of my life. So these people did serve to open up my eyes to various other forms of music, to turn me onto the great, wonderful school of world music, which I really do like a lot. Now, before I go into my second reading at 6:25 in the morning, I would like to say something about the homecoming parade. I saw an ad in the subway which totally incensed me and made me, like, almost jump up and down. Although I rarely get angry that way, I just sort of cry. It was an advertisement for the homecoming parade, but it was asking for donations for this parade. And if you recall the staggering expense of the fight, the altercation, or whatever it was in the Persian Gulf, close to $1 billion a day or something, some incredibly inflated amount that you can only hope to imagine, that is sort of like having someone do a crime to you and rob you, whether it's one-to-one on the street or insurance or taxes or a bank defaulting, whatever. Somebody robs you and then you're asked to pay their court case fees. That's what it sounds like to me. I would ask people just not to do any counter demonstrations or have a presence there that is disruptive to the so-called festivities. Just don't go. Just say no, as Nancy would say, Auntie Nancy Reagan. Don't participate. Don't be part of it, because it's a line. You are being sold a bill of goods. And the whole flag-waving, red, white, and blue blood, America first, patriotism, chauvinism, masculinism, whatever it is, it nauseates me. And I will not participate. I will not bring my tired and ill body to that place and make my presence felt. I will make it unfelt. And I urge all BAI listeners to do the same. This is a private thing with me. It's just not a good thing. Don't do it. So, our tally is standing. I've actually raised it just a tiny bit, sort of like my, like the decibels of my voice. I've got my microphone up so high and I still can't hear myself. The tally stands at $46,495. That withstanding, my voice that is, the kind ministrations of the crew from Cosmic Debris, my former show, who are here answering phones for me, and they're not being kept very busy, but they are here, and they brought me tea and home-baked cookies, and I'm very, very thankful to Rocky and Pandora for doing that for me. That's one of the things about BAI. We do kick in and come through for each other when we have to, and who else would drag their sorry behinds out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning to answer phones and minister to an ailing jock like myself, jockette, I should say, or jockess. But these incredibly dedicated people who were here, I believe, last Sunday morning. Another sip of lukewarm tea. The number to call if you'd like to contribute and join and kick in a little money to the pot, the $300,000 membership drive, the number is 212 279-3400. And there are, as I say, volunteers standing by. The staff, the crew of Cosmic Debris, Rocky and Pandora are there. And a regular subscription is $50. A subscription of $65 will bring you, that's $15 above the regular subscription price. A $65 pledge will bring you a tote bag or a baseball cap or a t-shirt. That's kind of neat. A $100 pledge will bring you the best of the lecture series, talking about the New World Order, people like Noam Chomsky, Michael Parenti, Helen Caldicott, Edward Said. The War Crimes Tribunal highlights is $75 for a pledge, featuring Ramsey Clark and eyewitness testimony of the U.S. war in Iraq. And a $60 pledge, $10 over the regular subscription price, will bring you Icarus, a quarterly publication from writers around the world. It's a literary journal. A $50 pledge made between now and 7 this morning will bring you a subscription to my own magazine. I am a publishing junkie as well as I'm just a feminist media junkie. I love being on the air talking about feminist issues, and I love putting out a magazine that is a showcase for relatively unknown women, their photos, their art, their poetry, their fiction. And I started Metis, which is the name of the magazine, about a year ago. And it's my child. I give birth 4 times a year, which is a lot more than most people are asked to do, most women are asked. I put it together, I fold it, I staple it. It doesn't cost a lot to put out your own publication with the advent of desktop publishing and page makeup programs. And that's what I do. I have a need to publish. Not my own stuff, although I filled the magazine with a lot of my own work before I started getting submissions. But now that's changing, and that's as it should be. There should be many voices in there. I will give a year subscription, which is 4 issues, to anyone pledging anything, anyone joining as a member, as a $25 or $50 member between now and 7 a.m. And the number is 212-279-3400. The name of the show is Heresy. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and I do believe at 6:33 in the morning that I will be able to get to the second story that I was going to read, if my voice holds up, and I think it will. This story is by Sally Bingham from the New Women and New Fiction anthology, edited by Susan Cahill. And the story is called Fear. You can call 279-3400 while I'm reading the story. Really, you can. Turning the knob so slowly it seemed to glide, greased under her palm, Jean finally opened the baby's door. It was early morning, the pink lambs and blue horses on the curtain just becoming visible. The crib under its canopy was still a pit of shadows, and Jean saw the brown bear, the snake, and the cat lined up at the rail on guard. She took a step toward the crib and stopped. The baby's smell, made of milk and powder and the soap she used in the washing machine, stood in front of her like a screen. She drew several breaths, trying to believe that since he smelt the same, nothing could be wrong. There had been so much crying the evening before, so much panic and screaming that she thought her observations might have been crazed. Hearing him stir, she bent down. His eyes were open. He lay on his back, his hands out, and looked up at her as though he had always expected her to be there. "Hello, little duck," she said, and reached in to pick him up. His body felt changed to her, limp, yielding, fat as a sack, she thought. Holding him tightly in her arms, she remembered how he had clung to her neck after she had punished him. "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry," she had sobbed, and he had repeated, "Ari." Then she put him down. As his feet touched the floor, he began to whimper. Turning, he tried to clutch her knees as his legs splayed out. She moved back and he slid to the floor where he sat whimpering and looked up at her. You can do it, she whispered cheerily and picked him up again and set him again to his feet. He gave a cry and leaned against her hands. She tried to push him away, but he clung, crumpling at the same time at the knees. They're not working, she thought. The legs are still not working. She picked him up and rocked him in her arms. He stopped crying immediately. Here's the little kitty, she said, taking the animal out of the crib. As the baby seized the toy, she closed her eyes and buried her mouth in his cheek. It seemed to her that she ought to put him down again to make sure, but she knew she wouldn't be able to bear his crying. That was what had caused it in the beginning, his crying. He would start over something so trivial. The cat had been misplaced in this case, and his crying would wind on and on, endlessly on and on, growing into small shrieks that pierced her head.